Now, when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world listening to this radio show. You're listening to Blood River Radio. I'm your host tonight. My name is Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be with you tonight, people. We're trying to do God's work on this radio station. It is April the 4th in the year of our Lord 2020. People that listen to the show very often, you know what comes next. I'm getting ready to say a prayer. We have so many things to pray for, to thank, to be thankful for, and so many things that need to be prayed for. I really don't know where to start, but I'm going to start from the beginning. So if you will, people, just bow your head. I'm going to say a quick prayer. Dear God Almighty in heaven, thank you so much for blessing us or answering so many prayers we've been answered this week. Our dear brother, Rich Hamblin, he's home recuperating after having a very serious surgery. I can remember just a couple of 20, 30 years ago when I worked in the laboratory at St. Francis, that was a lot more serious surgery than it is now. But he's home, like I say, who are recuperating, and he's doing well, even though if they did have to shave his beard a little bit. Also, people, if you will, please pray for our brother Sam Bushman. You know, he's still suffering with this Bell's palsy called Hell's palsy, but he's got a lot of other issues too, and he never misses a day. You know, as you well know, he ran our show flawlessly last week when we taped, I think, our maybe the best show we've ever done. We had General Nick Glastovic on from Croatia. We had the one and only Dr. Tomislav Sunic. I just call him Dr. Tom. I don't know anybody like them that have been through the life experiences they had. But, Lord, if you will, please stay with them, oh, God. Stay with Dr. Thompson. Stay with with the general. If you will, please pray for Liberty News Radio. Please pray for look out for me, oh, Lord. Look out for all of our friends and families out there. And, Lord, I ask all of this in Jesus' name, oh, Lord. Amen. Have a little patience with me, my prayer. I just have so many things to pray for. I get them mixed up. Anyway, here's some announcements before we go to our first guest. We have the Faith and Freedom Conference has been canceled. I really hate to hear that. They felt like they had no choice but to cancel it because all the hotels are being shut down. Travel is hard to get there. To me, if it was me, I would have had it, even if it was only going to be two people there. We could have slept in sleeping bags. We cannot let this crap shut us down. We can't be beaten by this stuff. Also, listen, the League of the South National Conference, it was probably still going to be on in June. We'll have Dr. Hill, Michael Hill, on the second hour, and his chief operating officer, Ike Baker. They'll be on the second hour. They'll be able to tell us more about that, okay? So hang in there. I just told you that General Nick and Thomas Sunic were on last week. Okay, listen, we have a series coming on 18th of April. I'm very, very excited about it. It's something I've been wanting to do ever since we started this radio station. We're going to have Monica Schaefer and the lady in Germany, Miss Voss. Miss Voss. They're going to be doing a series on the Holocaust series. Doing a series on the Holocaust. It's going to take up the whole 2 hours of April the 18th. It might even spill over into another weekend, but that's what's coming out. But anyway, people, before we bring our next guest on, we'll just kind of recap what we did last week. As you know, I already told you that we had Dr. Tom Sunic on and we had General Hill on. We're getting ready to bring up in a few minutes, we're going to bring on, Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center. And once again, we need about 12 hours to talk to this fellow. But naturally, we'll be talking about the 10th Amendment, the Constitution of the United States, and a lot of other things that have to do with it right now. There's never enough time to study, but I just went back a little while before the show, and I realized that Patrick Henry, Samuel Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and a whole host of other of our patriots were really against the Constitution. You know, I just found that out today. And they were called, called them the Anti-Federalists. At the time, the articles I read said it was kind of that the term Anti-Federalist was kind of a derogatory term. But, you know, and they said, here's what they said, and we'll get with this. I'll run this by our guest when he comes on, Michael Meharry. They said that they were afraid that the Constitution, the way it was written, would lead to, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, an almighty powerful central government that would oppress the people and take away our liberties. And you know what? I kind of hate to say it, but they're right. Boy, howdy, was that prophetic sound said? Said absolutely it was a prophetic. I mean, I can't think in my lifetime when we've come to this point. We're living in such a tyrannical government. Once again, to get ready for the show, Lord, I went by to review some of the other things. I had dug some things out of the old storage bin. You people might remember a thing called the MIAC report. It's called the Missouri Information Analysis Center. And the MIAC, there, the Missouri Information Analysis Center, was one of 58, what they call fusion centers, scattered out all over the United States. I know Sam will remember that because Sam's not as old as I am, but he's probably older than a lot of y'all people. But what it is, it is a combination. Each fusion center is a combination of local, state, and federal law enforcement areas. See, hence, there's the word fusion. See, the local, the state, and the feds, like your sheriff that used to be a constitutional entity, your local police department, like Memphis City, like the city police, and your feds, they're all fused into one under the almighty God, federal government. Plus, we have other public people. I would call them the Arapanichiks, like they had in the Soviet Union. These low-level, low-IQ, low-moral people that will turn you in for not 30 pieces of silver, one piece of silver. They turn you into the all-seeing eye. And they also have the private entities, what we would call NGOs, all bonded together to watch our every move. And, here's some of the things they came up with. They were originally concerned about the fusion centers and all these people in the feds, you know, these 58 fusion centers. They were very, at one time, some years ago, and I know Sam will remember it, about the Montana Freedmen, went on out there in Nevada under all of our people out there, you know, I can't remember the name right now. I know Sam will know them. They were very worried about a reconstitution, I'll call it, of the militia movement. If you go into the Constitution, if you look in the Second Amendment, the term Constitution is spelled out what it is. Anyway, people, because it's, so if you believe in the Constitution, you're also a terrorist. Well, we got to go to a quick break. We're going to bring our guest on after this break.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they're, you know, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, people, we are right back. We just started a second segment of the first hour. You're listening to Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie Bombadil Miller. I'm your host. And we're bringing on our guest, Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center. I'm really excited to have him on tonight. I wish I could have reviewed more material that are pertinent to this show, but we'll have him on again if he'd be willing to come on. Mike, how are you doing, fella?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. I'm really excited to have you on. I was reviewing some material and stuff, but, you know, there's never enough time to really review and study like I'd like to. Plus, I'm old and slow. But without further ado, why don't you tell the people something about your organization and your part that you play in their organization, the 10th Amendment Center?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the National Communications Director for the 10th Amendment Center, and I can sum up what we do really in one pretty succinct sentence: follow the Constitution, every issue, every time, no exceptions, and no excuses. I mean, that really sums up the whole philosophy of the organization. We are dedicated to constitutional originalism as it was understood when it was ratified. That's still the meaning it holds today, despite what a bunch of politically connected lawyers might have you believe. And so we do two things primarily. We do education. We teach about the Constitution, about originalism, about what the various clauses of the Constitution were understood to mean. You know, things like the General Welfare Clause or the Supremacy Clause. What did those mean? How were they understood? How are they to be interpreted? And then we also do activism. We work at the state and local level primarily to try to break down overreaching unconstitutional federal authority. We use this fancy process called nullification, which is something that Thomas Jefferson and James Madison kind of laid out the philosophy of back in the 1700s. But in a nutshell, it's basically using state and local power to resist federal overreach. And in Federalist 46, James Madison kind of gave us the blueprint. It was understood that the federal government was supposed to be limited, that, as Madison put it, the powers delegated to the federal government under the proposed Constitution are few and defined. And so the question was, well, what do you do if they start taking on powers that they're not supposed to? And Madison said the means of opposition are powerful and at hand. And he listed several things that could happen. starting with protests from the governor. But I think the most key thing that he gave us was to refuse to cooperate with officers of the union. And that was the exact words that he used. And this gives us a powerful tool today to resist federal authority, because federal government depends on state and local action to do virtually everything it does. And if the state and local government simply say, you know what, we're not going to be involved in implementing this program or enforcing this law, it makes it very, very difficult for the federal government to do what it wants to do. So we call that nullification in effect. It basically just stops the federal government in its tracks when it's doing things that it's not supposed to do. So we actually work at the state level to get laws passed to withdraw cooperation in law enforcement. And the beauty of this is that the Supreme Court has held since 1842 that the federal government cannot force a state or local government to use its own personnel or resources to enforce a federal law or implement a federal program. So we actually have the Supreme Court on our side in this one instance. So it's a very powerful tool that we have and we utilize at the 10th Amendment Center. So that's it in a nutshell. We educate about the Constitution and then we take action to try to put the federal government back in the box it was intended to stay in.
That's an excellent, excellent overview. I don't know how you could do any better. I really don't. Let me ask you a question. When, to your knowledge, what is the latest, the most recent operation that you and your the 10th Amendment Center have had on the front line, boots on the ground, helping? Have you gone to like a county, a state, et cetera, to help someone implement the process of nullification against the tyrannical government?
This is on, going on a daily basis, particularly when state legislatures are in session. Now, this year's weird because normally this is at the peak of our activity, but nobody's having any activity at all right now. So, last year there were 86 laws in 2019 that were passed at the state level that pushed back against federal power in some way, and these are things from legalization of medical marijuana. You know, that is an example of nullification. The federal government says that it maintains complete prohibition of marijuana. States say, no, we're going to legalize medical marijuana, or in some cases legalize cannabis completely. When that happens, there is no more state enforcement of federal prohibition, and federal prohibition falls apart. So that's probably one of the most powerful examples of how it's worked. But you can take that same model and apply it to all kinds of things. Federal enforcement of gun control. State and local governments don't have to enforce federal gun control. So there's actually a bill that was introduced in Missouri and that was making its way through the legislature before they went on recess due to the virus that pulled state and local support from enforcing future federal gun control. So these are the types of things that we do. We try to apply that model to as many things as possible. Sound money is another example. By facilitating the sale of gold and silver, it creates the opportunity to use an alternative currency, the Federal Reserve notes, which is a way to undermine the power of the Federal Reserve. This is, like I said, it's every single day at the 10th Amendment Center. We're working to undermine overreaching federal authority from issues like marijuana to surveillance to health care, all kinds of different things, and we try to get as creative as possible with it.
Well, you know, Mike, I tell you what, man, you are a crackerjack. You know that I know your business for sure. Let me ask you this question. Now, you're probably familiar with the big protest they had in Richmond, Virginia, 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, when the governor there said he was going to come around if he had to door to door. They were going to take people's AR-15. You're probably familiar with that. Now, I would think, was that an example of, was that be an example of the state refute? Well, actually, the state did not, per se, the state government refused to cooperate with the feds in any way. It was probably, would you say it was more we, the people on the ground, the grassroots, we, the people, rather than the state pushing back against the feds?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would argue that with anything, when it comes to government overreach at any level, ultimately, it starts with the people. I mean, it is very helpful when you can get state governments to pass laws that, you know, say for surveillance, requiring a warrant for the use of certain surveillance equipment. That hinders the federal surveillance state. again, you know, going back to the legalization of marijuana, those things at the state level legislatively can be very helpful. But ultimately, it comes down to individuals and the willingness to engage in the things that the federal government says that they don't want you to engage in. The nullification of marijuana prohibition started long before there was any laws passed because people wanted to use it. And, you know, I'll make a little side note. I am a medical marijuana user but I don't use it psychotropically. But it's not because I want to smoke weed. It's because it's something that the federal government was never given the authority to prohibit in the first place. But, I think your point is very well taken. It is ultimately up to individuals. It's up to people. We have to decide we're not going to put up with this, and we can use the mechanisms of various levels of government to try to thwart what is going on. But we have to have that organization. We have to have people that are willing to stand up for their rights. And we saw that in Virginia. I think they passed some gun control, but it certainly wasn't as draconian. I'm not even saying the word right now. Draconian as it could have been, because people stood up and protested. So I think that's important.
Mike, we have gone by this segment really quick. We have to go to a quick break. We'll be right back, Mike. People, hang on. We'll be right back with this wonderful, wonderful guest we have on tonight.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the country's top infectious disease expert, owns up to doing some not-so-smart things as he helps lead the White House effort to stem the spread of the new coronavirus. Things like forgetting to eat and not getting enough sleep. The blunt-speaking Fauci also has had to contend with a deluge of online threats and uncomfortable personal encounters with admirers as the pandemic consumes his every hour. Nevertheless, the 79-year-old epidemiologist insists he's just doing his job. Still, concerns about his safety are serious enough that Fauci now has a security detail. The Department of Health and Human Services requested that the U.S. Marshals Services authorize special agents from the HHS Inspector General's office as part of Fauci's protection, according to people familiar with those arrangements. The Justice Department approved a request to deputize 9 agents to protect Fauci. This is USA Radio News.
So, I don't know if you saw this, but there was just this big study about anxiety among us. Really interesting in this study about what can keep us up at night. One of the top stressors out of all the things to worry about is paying for health care. A huge majority of us say we're worried about that. It's totally understandable, but there's an affordable alternative to health insurance. It's MediShare. It's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it has worked beautifully for more than 25 years. And not only do people save lots of money, they get access to a huge network of doctors. They get to take advantage of 24/7 live access online where they can talk to a doctor and even get prescriptions. And of course, there is the savings. With MediShare, the typical family saves $500 a month. That can help you sleep easier too. There's a lot to love about it. No wonder it's grown so much. Here is the number to find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Donald Trump has informed Congress that he is removing Michael Atkinson, the inspector general who flagged the Ukraine whistleblower complaint. In a letter to the leaders of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, the president said, "This is to advise you I am exercising my power as president to remove from office the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community." The letter also says, "It is vital that I have the fullest confidence in the appointees serving as Inspectors General. This is no longer the case with this particular Inspector General." The firing is to take place in 30 days. Pop singer Pink, who said she's recovering from COVID-19, announced via Twitter that she's donating $1 million to help healthcare professionals in the fight against coronavirus. Half will go to Philadelphia's Temple University Hospital Emergency Fund, and the other $500,000 will go to the Los Angeles Emergency Fund. Pink's mother worked at Temple for 18 years, according to the singer. This is USA Radio News.
my day.
Well, people, thank you so much for hanging on. Just in case you don't know, if you're living under a rock, this is April the 4th, the year of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, 2020. And we have on the great Michael Meharry, who's on representing the 10th Amendment Center here in the United States. And he's here, like he told us, their job, the 10th Amendment Center, amongst many other things, is to educate we the people out there about your constitutional rights, the rights that you really have. You know, a right that you don't know, I'm sure Mike would agree, if you don't know the right, and even more important, if you don't want to defend that right, it's going to be lost. An undefended right is a right loss. Is that right, Mike?
Absolutely. You know, I'll quibble with you in a friendly way. I hate the term constitutional right because it infers that the Constitution somehow gives us our rights. We have our rights by virtue of our humanity. We have our rights because God gave them to us. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights actually puts restrictions on government. It forbids them from infringing on certain rights. And I get frustrated at times because people tend to think that because, you know, somebody wrote it down on a piece of paper, that's why they have the right. We have the right by virtue of our humanity, and you're absolutely right. In order to maintain those rights, we have to be ever vigilant, and we have to be willing to stand up for them, and we have to be willing to say no when the government oversteps its bounds. The Constitution is great as a guide, but, you know, it's what the Founding Fathers called a parchment barrier. It's a piece of paper with writing on it. It's up to us ultimately, and I would argue that the reason that we've seen our rights erode and the reason that we've seen the federal government expand to the size and scope that it has is because we've not been vigilant and we've simply allowed it to grow. And, you know, that happens, I think, a lot of times because we get into the party politics and we think, well, you know, as long as our guy's in charge of the government, everything will be fine. He can do what he wants. And we just get worried about the expansion of government when the other team is in control. And I think we need to be diligent of our rights at all times, especially in times like these when people are afraid and that there is a true health crisis. This is the time that government wants to expand in so many ways, and we need to beware of what we allow it to do, because I guarantee you it won't go back to normal anytime soon when we let go and allow the government to begin to expand its powers.
Very well spoken. I could not agree with you more. I most certainly could not. Would it be a fair statement to say kind of what you said was that we get our laws, our rights come from the laws of nature and the nature's God, as codified in the Holy Bible, laws, natural, what we call, what I guess would be called natural laws, would be nothing more than just common sense coming from the Bible, what God's given us. I guess the Ten Commandments would be a good way to a guide to sum up some of our rights. And also, I'll add that, would it be fair to say that we the people created the Constitution to create us, we the people are the masters of the we're the masters of the government, and we the people cannot get, we have no authority that's not, if it contradicts, if it's repugnant to the Bible, to the Holy Bible, then our authority is so-called false. It's a false. And if anything that's in the government, any kind of law passed by the government, if it's repugnant to the Constitution, it's to be treated as not law at all. Am I confusing you there, Mike? Am I trying to say too much?
No, I agree with you completely. And I you know, it's interesting because you go back to the founding era and you read what the federal government was supposed to be. It was supposed to be very limited. It was supposed to do only a very small thing. I talked about that. I mentioned that quote from Federalist 45 that Madison said that the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. And he said, those which remain to the states and the people are numerous and indefinite. So the system of government that we were intended to have was supposed to be decentralized, with most of the authority being at the state and local level, which makes sense. We know better, more locally, what our needs are and what our culture is and what, you know, different places are different. I mean, that sounds like a stupid thing to say, but Tennessee is different than Florida, and Florida is different than California. So why would you want one-size-fits-all laws and edicts and programs handed down from Washington, D.C. that apply to 350 million people? It's simply too big. Jefferson said that the nation was too big to be ruled by a single government. He said that way back in the 1800s when the U.S. government was very small. But it's interesting, as you read, as the Constitution was being debated and folks were concerned, how big is this federal government going to be? Alexander Hamilton said exactly what you said in terms of any law that is contrary to the Constitution is no law at all. Hamilton called them void. So anything that the federal government does that is beyond the powers delegated, and the powers delegated are actually very, very limited. You can find them in Article 1, Section 8 mostly. Depending on how you count, the federal government has about 25 to 30 spheres that it's supposed to operate in. It's not supposed to be, running education or health care or, all of the millions of things that it does. Those are supposed to be state and local. So I think there is a good corollary between the Constitution and the Bible as you're looking at it, because those are the standards that we're supposed to look to. And when it comes to the U.S. government, the Constitution is the standard. That's the foundation it's built on. And unfortunately, most people have just simply tossed that away because they want the federal government to do stuff for them. So now we have a federal government, instead of being limited to things few and defined, it tells us how much water we can have in our toilet and what kind of light bulbs to screw into our light fixtures. And that's what we're pushing back against at the 10th Amendment Center, because I believe centralized authority is the biggest threat to our liberty. When you start allowing monopoly government, one group of people, to dictate everything, you're going to have problems. You're going to have this overreaching, overbearing, centralized control. And that is never good. Monopolies never work out well for the average person. And we're rapidly moving towards a situation where we have a monopoly government. Sometimes I say the federal government's like, if you imagine Walmart being the only place you could buy groceries. Well, nobody would agree with that idea, because ultimately you would end up with higher prices and you'd end up with less selection and you end up with awful customer service because there's no competition, right? Same thing happens in government. And it's ironic, the same people who absolutely loathe corporate monopoly embrace and love government monopoly, and they're both dangerous for exactly the same reasons.
Well spoken. Hear, hear, hear. I'll second everything you said. Mike, would it be another fair statement to say the Constitution really was put in place for one reason? I don't have my Declaration of Independence here, but I like that document. And it says something like, I'd say about around the third clause, it says, we the people, man, we were endowed by our Creator with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are the three big rights we have, if I'm not mistaken. And it goes on to say that the purpose of government, the only purpose, I'll say in brackets, to emphasize mine, is the only purpose of government is to guard and maintain to protect the rights, God-given rights.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't do a very good job of that. See, it seems to me that governments at every level spend most of their time violating our rights. But you're right, and that's exactly the purpose that was laid out in the Declaration of Independence. And it said that, people have a right to establish a government, and by golly, they have a right to abolish it when it becomes the enemy of their rights and their liberties. And I think, I look at the Constitution, I look at it like a contract as much as anything. It is a document that establishes a system of government, and it was written with a certain philosophical foundation in mind. That philosophical foundation was that government was to be limited to certain spheres, that it was primarily designed to protect life, liberty, and property, and it was supposed to stay within its sphere. And the reason that we have a written constitution today is that the founding generation fought a revolutionary war to free themselves from a empire that had an unwritten constitution that could change at the whim of the government. And they didn't want that to happen again. They wanted to ensure that it was the people that established the government, and that the government would not be able to change the rules on the people once it was established. So they said, we're going to write these rules down. We're going to put them in this document. This is what the government has to abide by. and it's written, and we can look back at it, and there's no way that that some government functionary somewhere can change the system on it. Well, in the last 100 years or so, what's happened is Americans have allowed the Supreme Court primarily to become what was very much like the British government, where the Supreme Court can change the rules. That's not a good thing. We need to go back to that written document.
Thank you, Mike. We'll be right back after this this other break. Be right back, folks.
Is being transferred to the listening ear. Listening professionals dedicated to hearing you.
Hello, listening ear. Who am I listening to?
Carrie, but I was calling my mom.
Yes, you were, but your mom was so busy she felt it was important for you to have someone who could completely focus on listening to you and you alone. So she subscribed to our service. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Where to start? Well, I can listen to school issues like science projects. I can listen to boy problems, although that's an extra $3 per call because of the emotional drain on me. How about we start with how you wish you had made cheerleader?
I didn't try out for cheerleader.
This isn't Mary?
Carrie. I'm Carrie.
Oh, sorry.
There is no substitute for a loving parent. And when you really listen, love is what they'll hear. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, folks, you're right back with Eddie Miller, Blood River Radio, and we have on as a guest Mike Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center, and I think he's doing a wonderful job tonight, folks. Mike, I certainly appreciate you being on. I'm going to bring you right back, and we'll ask you a couple of questions. Golly, we have about 10 minutes. This hour is going by way too fast. You mentioned earlier in this interview, you talked about the general welfare clause, something that's always been kind of a thorn in my side and probably a thorn in your side. Could you tell the audience a little bit about the general welfare clause in the Constitution and how it's been, in your opinion, if it's has it been abused? Has it been wrongly interpreted? Tell us a little bit about that, Mike.
Well, I think the conventional wisdom today, if you ask somebody, what does the general welfare clause mean? They'll say, well, that means the federal government can do anything it needs to for the general welfare. Well, if you really think about it, that could be virtually anything and everything. And we know, as Madison said, that the federal government was delegated few and defined powers. So how would you have a government with few and defined powers that could do literally anything for, quote, the general welfare, however the politicians define it? Those two things don't go together. So there's something wrong somewhere in this train of thought. And you have to go back and understand the structure of contract law to really understand what this general welfare is. If you look at the general welfare clause, it says that the federal government can tax and raise money for the general welfare. And then it lists specific items. This is all in Article 1, Section 8. It lists specific powers that Congress can utilize for the general welfare. As virtually everybody who supported the Constitution during the ratifying convention said, the general welfare, what the federal government can do for the general welfare, is limited by the enumerated powers that follow. In other words, if it was just anything and everything for the general welfare, why would you make a list? You know, it's redundant, and it's actually a violation of general contract law to say that you can do anything and then make a list. The list is redundant, so you don't make a list if it means anything and everything. So the federal government can tax, and it can raise money, and it can spend it for the general welfare, which means for the benefit of the entire country, but it has to remain within those powers that are delegated. It can't do things outside of its delegated powers. So you just have to understand that it's a limited general welfare, not anything and everything. But today, it's anything and everything in the minds of most people, you know, and that's where we've gotten to the point again where we have the federal government telling us how much water we can have in our toilet because people have abused that clause and allowed the feds to go far beyond what was understood to be allowed in the founding era.
You know, Mike, also something interesting. This is kind of an aside on my own. I find very interesting, you know, how the constitutional militia of several states has such a bad reputation now, bad press. I notice in Article 1, I believe it is, it says one of the things that the government, federal government, has allowed to do, and you're so right, federal governments there are allowed to do, the boundaries are very small, very well defined. One of the things that they're supposed to do is to provide for the organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So would you find that kind of a paradox, you know, how the militia, going back to this Mayock report I was studying early before bringing you on the show, I hope we have time to mention that. What a paradox in the militia, the Mayock report, one of their main things to do was to come out and track down the militia to turn the militia movement into a bad boy. But yet right here in the federal government, it says that they're supposed to organize it and train the militia. It's kind of what do you think about that, Mike?
Well, they've bastardized the meaning of militia. So now most people think, well, the militia is the National Guard. And, you know, certainly the federal government does arm and train and organize the National Guard. And in fact, the states have very little control over their own militia if the National Guard is in fact what it was. Interestingly, if you go back to the founding era, the militia was basically every able-bodied male in the state was expected to, you know, to train periodically and be willing to take up arms for defense of the state. It is interesting that things have evolved and changed so much. You know, at the time, most people did not want the United States to have a standing army. They wanted the militia to be the backbone of defense. But, of course, now we live in a world where the United States is trying to be the global empire, and you have to have a standing army, and you know, you certainly can't have state militias if you're going to run things in Iraq. So it's definitely been bastardized to a large degree, and it's a sad thing because ultimately, you know, it was intended for us to be responsible for our own defense, which I think would probably be a much better model than what we have today, because now we're fully dependent on the standing army and the U.S. government, and that's a recipe for disaster in the long run, I think.
You know, I think you're so right, Mike. I believe that the National Guard, as we know it today, came into being about the same time in 1913 when they passed that the Federal Reserve Act, you know, and brought in the Internal Revenue Service. I believe that's when Wilson and his cronies got rid of the militia, pretty much, or just marginalized these militia of the several states and brought in this basically federalized the militia. I think you're so right. And I'd like to go into something else now. Golly, I wish we had more time. I hope we have time to cover this. I went to your website, Mike, and pulled up some of the articles on your website. Are you familiar with the one on your website? I think I sent it to you. It's Surveillance is the Tool of Tyrants, that article. It's by my by you, so you're probably yeah, pretty familiar with
it. I'm intimately familiar with that one, yeah.
Would you like to cover that to me is very frightening that I read that. That's because you see these cameras going into place everywhere. So I'm going to shut up. Would you tell the people a little bit about this article you wrote?
Yeah, well, I heard you talking about fusion centers before you brought me on. And this is all part of what has become, and you alluded to this, a very integrated national surveillance state that incorporates state, local, and federal organizations that basically share information, they share surveillance tools, and are using it to spy on virtually everybody in the United States. The scope and depth of surveillance that we're under is really stunning. But you'll get a lot of people that will say, well, you know, if you don't have anything to hide, you really don't have anything to fear. And this drives me crazy when people say that, because they don't realize that the government's conception of a bad person is not the same as yours. You know, we think of a bad person as somebody who's going to try to do us harm, or, you know, somebody that's maybe going to blow up something, or somebody dangerous. The government perception of a bad person is anybody who opposes the status quo in government. Anybody that the government sees as a threat can be a bad person. So that could be anybody from a Tea Party activist to a militia member to a Second Amendment supporter. You can go over to the left, the Black Lives Matter, anti-war protesters. These are all considered bad people and are subject to surveillance. And the article that you're referring to actually talks about the fact that there is there are policies in place. They call them COGs, continuity of governments, and it's basically designed, if there's a natural disaster, something that decapitates the government, it allows the military to take control and continue to ensure that we're all kept under the thumb. And within this, they've developed this giant database of people that are considered quote-unquote dangerous by virtue of the fact that they might not be so willing to go along with the powers that be in an event like that. And so the article puts all of this together and points out the fact that this surveillance state could very easily be used to find you if you're a Second Amendment supporter and you want to keep your guns, or if you simply oppose the power of government. And it would be very easy through these databases and the surveillance state to track you down, round you up, marginalize you, and put you in a camp. And people say, well, that would never happen in America. Well, we've already put people in camps in America. Back in World War II, we put 100,000 Japanese American in internment camps. So the surveillance state that is evolving is a tool for control, and I think people need to be aware of that, and they need to be a little less blasé about, you know, saying, well, if you don't have anything to hide, because you may well have something to hide simply because of your political beliefs.
Mike, before we run completely out of time, could you give people how can they get in touch with you? What's your website? Do you have any literature? How can people join up the 10th Amendment Center? Give us the quick dope.
Yeah, absolutely. First thing I'd like you to do is visit 10thAmendmentCenter.com. It's all spelled out, T-E-N-T-H. Once you get to the website, you'll see our main page. We have articles. You'll see our blog. And there you can see a better idea of what we're doing politically, the various issues that we're working on. So check out what we're writing and reporting on. You can join as a member for as little as $2 a month if you are supportive of what we do. And then also check out ConstitutionOwnersManual.com. That's a new book that I've written, and it explains all of these clauses of the Constitution in a very succinct way from the founding perspective.
Thank you so much, Mike. I will definitely be getting in touch with you because we barely scratched the surface. People, you've been listening to Mike Meharry. He is with the 10th Amendment Center. And what a wonderful guest he's been. People, hang on to your hat. We'll be right back the second hour with Dr. Michael Hill of the League of the South and his Chief Operating Officer, Ike Baker.